Sometimes we think we have control on something, but we don't. So I decided to let go. I started my cancer treatment 17th of December. I realized it wasn't in my hands. So I put it in the hands of God, if I may say, independent of every person's beliefs, my life. I couldn't have more control anymore because control was making me exhausted and I couldn't control this. I only could do my part. And my part was living life. You're like a smell wings to fly. You're like a smell wings.
You're like a smell wings to fly. Welcome to the Diving for Pearls podcast. I'm your host, Miss Gina P. Nelson. On this show, we will feature women in the UAE and across the globe who are breaking ground in their industry while at the same time transforming the cultural landscape. The women whom we will feature here on this podcast are in many ways analogous to pearl divers, women who have taken calculated risks to uncover and harvest pearls of wisdom. Insights that have led them to illuminate their pathway and the pathway of others. These women are thought leaders, innovators, visionaries, women who embody the spirit of the founding father of the UAE, His Highness Sheikh Zayed bin Sultan Al Nahyan. We invite you to listen in, take the plunge, reflect on the poignant stories of courage and resilience while delving deeper into your own journey of self-discovery and exploration. Pearls lie not on the seashore. If thou desires one, thou must dive for it. Anonymous. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to the Diving for Pearls podcast. And we would like to say a special thank you for our veteran listeners who've been following us all along. We are now in episode 20. We are nearing the end of season one. Today, we are honored to have Ms. Sandra Martineau as one of our distinguished guests in the second half of season one. She is a Dubai-based international author and speaker, a therapist, life coach, teacher, and storyteller, who hails from a small town, Setúbal, just 40 kilometers south of Lisbon. Sandra holds a master's of psychology degree and has also trained in neuro-linguistic programming, traditional Chinese medicine, nutrition, and aesthetics. She is the author of a book called The Dance of Life. It is the story of her journey, and more specifically, her healing journey. And this book offers individuals tips on how they could change their lives by building strong self-support systems. I had the honor of meeting Sandra recently through one of our mutual friends, Beatrix Henkel. Beatrix is a past guest. She is from episode 8. So you could check out that episode on being and leading a more inspired, joyful, and curious life. So Beatrix introduced us. It was probably around February. Both Sandra and I met personally in Dubai, but today we're recording remotely. And I want to say that I am honored and privileged to have her on board. And thank you, Sandra, for being willing to share your story. I know we're going to learn many gems about your journey here in the UAE. So Sandra, I would like to say welcome to the Diving for Pearls show.
Hello, Gina. Thank you for this wonderful introduction. And yes, a big kiss to Beatrix, because if it wasn't for her, we hadn't met. And let's start with our conversation, our talk, and see where it goes.
Yes, I'm glad that you're here. And thank you again to Beatrix. And I just want to mention to our listeners, Sandra also recently spoke at one of the Wednesday live sessions, which was between race, Raise the Awareness of Coaching and Education, and Bella and Bella Productions, which is our platform that we're currently building.
So our talk this past Wednesday or last Wednesday was growth as a pathway to healing. So we'll touch on some of those points, but you'll see that this conversation hopefully will help you uncover your own journey here in the UAE or wherever you are currently located. So Sandra, I actually want to begin by just unpacking a little bit on your childhood. So you come from a small town that you mentioned was 40 kilometers south of Lisbon. What was life growing up for you in that small town?
Well, it's a really small town compared, for instance, with Dubai. My town has around 10,000 people. When I was living there and growing up there, that was my reality. My mom and my father, they were working for someone else. We had a middle-class life. My grandparents, they had a coffee shop. And from the other side, they were farmers, agriculture, small agriculture. So they were selling on markets to have their life. So I came for a very, I cannot say financially low, but medium-class background. And in the first years, I thought the life was that, having the going to work or going to school, come home, have the meals, go back the other day. But as I was growing up, I started to see that life was more than that, by seeing television, by getting access to internet. And the world started to open many, many doors. And I started to get really, really curious about it. And that small city started to get very small to me, if I may say.
Yes, a small town is 10,000 is pretty small. I grew up actually in Hartford, Connecticut, and it was about 120,000. So I can imagine living in a small town. What would be your frame of reference would seem as if it's very small in particular, especially if that's all you knew at such a young age. I know we're going to unpack your book, The Dance of Life, much later, but you did mention in that text, in the first chapters, that from a very young age, you were very aware. And it just goes back to what you just mentioned. You knew that life was more than the series of just rudimentary motions, we would say, like going to school, going to work, getting married, having kids, and then starting it all over again. What do you think prompted you to have that introspection at such a young age?
It was a feeling and one image associated with that feeling. I had the feeling that I would, fly. Imagine that our feet just get off the ground and that we could fly. And I had the feeling that in my dreams, when I was sleeping, I was flying above my town, my city, and I would know the city from the top. And I had images in my head from the city from the top, I was seeing like a bird. And I had those images, and I've never been in some of the places. And I started to question, how do I have images from places that I've never been there? And then my question started with the feeling that I seemed that I knew what it meant to fly in my dream, and having images of things that I wasn't physically there before. That's how this expansion needed to happen in my real life, because the way I was thinking and dreaming about it.
That is very interesting. And because I've heard that sometimes being on top, like getting on high places, sometimes that will help us with perspective and regaining perspective. And it's interesting that you had that within a dream. So going back to now all these self-questionings, the self-exploration, was there any specific moment in your childhood that prompted you to start that internal journey?
Yes, it was one moment it was really young childhood. I don't know, 5 or 6, because I was really, really an introvert. And I couldn't stand out for myself. I was always put myself quiet, and I wouldn't manifest my desire or what I wanted and what I didn't want. My dream career was to be a ballerina. And on that birthday, my mom made me a ballerina cake. I was supposed to blow the candles like every girl on their birthday. And a smaller friend of mine was there, 2 years younger, kind of. And she started to cry really, really loud and saying, "I want to blow the candles. I want to blow the candles." And I was thinking to myself, no, it's my birthday. It's my candles. I will blow them. And my mom said, against my will, "Oh, it's okay. She can blow the candles." And I said, in my mind, I said, "No, she can't. She cannot blow my candles because it's my birthday. It's my ballerina cake." Do you know what happened? I didn't speak, and she blew the candles of my cake. And that made me feel really miserable about not expressing what I really, really wanted to express. It was just the need and the want of blowing my candles for my birthday cake. And that just inside of me just created a rumbling of emotions. And why didn't you speak? Why? You wanted to speak and you didn't. You had everything in your head and you didn't say it. Why didn't you? Why didn't you? And that started to create a thought after thought, question after question. And that's how everything started with this event.
Thank you for sharing that, Sandra. I could imagine that there are a lot of emotions that were going through at that time as a young girl. When would you say you had the courage to start speaking up for yourself?
Very, very late. Probably after I finished my first degree in college, probably around 22, 23, when I had to leave my hometown to have my first job. I went to the south of Portugal and I had to manage by myself. So I had to start speaking more. Of course, many years before, I made a personal agreement about speaking to others, but that was just in my comfort zone. When I had to move from my hometown to work, I had to put that in practice because I just couldn't not speak about what was happening and what I needed to find a house, to get a job, to know the city, to move around. And that was challenging because I didn't have anyone that I knew around me to speak for me or to do for me. So I really, really had to step out of this internal struggle of not speaking and saving everything for myself.
So I could imagine that could be very daunting as a young adult, I should say, at 22, 23, having to finally work and then engage with individuals. And you labeled yourself prior to that as an introvert. And it seemed as if life forced you to find a voice. Is there something in particular about your career pathway also that enabled you to start speaking up for yourself? Because I'm aware that you started your career journey as a physical education teacher.
Yes, because as a physical education teacher or work in the sports world, they see us as outcoming persons, as confident persons. So I had that on my back saying, you are in sports. So this is like a social stigma probably, but it made me be there and speak for groups, for my students in class. And when we did events, sports events, I was always put it to speak. I don't know why. I was not better or worse, but probably the universe, I don't know, was attending my ask of I want to be more outgoing. And I was always put it in situations that I had to overcome this speaking fear. It was with my first job, kind of being a PE teacher, because I had to address individuals and groups. And I started to have always leading jobs in my teacher career. So I always had to address groups of people, since students to parents to other teachers to other schools. And I was always the one there. I had to develop tools to do that because I knew it would happen every single time.
And it's interesting that you said that, Sandra, because I know that the statistics show that individuals who have that fear of speaking, something like almost close to 80% of the population, that people have that anxiety of speaking publicly. So looking back as a young adult, just starting her career, someone who may have been reticent about engaging in conversations with other people and having difficulty initially maybe speaking in front of individuals, what would you have done differently now looking back?
Of course, when I was there, I thought I was doing everything in my power to do the best. But now looking back, I would prepare even better everything I had to say, like put it more in topics, more simple. I would put like I would do long texts and I would do more in topics, my major points that I need to speak. And probably I would find something to calm my anxiety. I don't know, a tea, a better night of sleep, finding something to have in my hand to help me to focus, a pen, or I don't know, you know, those balls that are very soft and you can have them. So having practical tools with me that could support me to be more confident. And one more thing, I would say to myself, you can handle it. I was not sure at the time that I could handle it. I was really insecure. I didn't know the power I had with that age that I know now. We can handle everything that comes in our way. And if that thing comes, we can handle. That would be something that I would say to my younger Sandra. You got it. You can handle it. Do it. Because if it's there, you can do. You are prepared. You have the tools. Work it out, baby.
Yes, in speaking, Sandra, thank you for sharing that. You reminded me of two things. Yes, we can handle it. We are much more capable of what we believe we are. So I agree with that, telling yourself, a younger self, that you can handle it. The self-talk is also important. And I do want you to touch on that a little bit, because I want to go back just a little bit. Where do you think your insecurities, where do you think that stemmed from as a young girl that prohibited you from really opening up yourself?
I will be really honest about it. But first, I want to say that I really, really, really love my parents. They gave me life. I need to acknowledge this before saying what I'm going to say. My parents are the best. But they were always telling me, shh, be quiet. Don't say that in front of people. You are so tiny. You need to be careful. Don't get hurt. Just be careful. I'll carry you. Be careful so you will fall. So my parents were kind of protecting me in their point of view of not allowing me to do things where I could get hurt physically and emotionally. They were protecting me. For instance, I wanted to learn how to rollerblade, and they always saying no, because you can get hurt. I wanted to go and explore things away from them. And they were always saying, no, it's very dangerous. I wanted to speak about different subjects that they were not accepted for my age range or in the society I was living at the time. And they were saying, no, you cannot speak about it because it's not good taken with these people. So I was put in a box, in a frame box, like in a frame or in a box of cultural beliefs that I shouldn't get hurt. It was scary, and I could always get hurt if I was exposing myself. So I started not to expose myself and save myself inside of me, because it was not well taken in the society being me. So I started to behave according to society rules for a long time. like what was accepted in my society. And as we mentioned before, I was living in a very, very small town with a very, if I may say, old-fashioned beliefs. And that was just not good for me. That's where everything started, in my point of view.
Thank you for sharing that, Sandra. I know you've probably heard of the term helicopter parenting. So it refers to those parents who really pay close attention to their child's every experiences and problems, whether it be in life or at school. And they're kind of just hovering overhead, trying to just engage whenever they can and help out. And sometimes it does more harm than good. And I know my parents specifically, they were extremely overprotective, maybe not in the way that your parents were. So now looking back at that, and I know you have great deal of love for your parents, as you have mentioned. What do you do differently? Because I know you are a mother of two.
Yes, I have a child of 12 and I have a stepson of 21 years old. My stepson is with me 50% of the time since he was five. So I kind of raised him also. First, I try to give them independence enough for them to decide. Of course, I cannot give independence to a five-year-old the same way I will give when he's 10, 15, 20. But this is once. I try to give independence for them to choose between, for instance, if he was five, do you want to dress the blue or the yellow? So they would choose. They have the possibility of choosing what they want in simple things. The other thing is, and this is one thing that I really stand for, if either of my sons, they choose something that I know it will not be good for them, and if I know I can have their back on that situation, I let them choose, even if they fall. Because when they are growing, if they fall, I will be there to support them, to get back on their feet again. So I allow them to choose whatever they want to choose. Of course, if it doesn't go and put their life in risk, of course, between in the normal range of being healthy and all the patterns of secure and everything. But I allowed my son and my stepson, of course, both of them, to choose. And sometimes I know, oh, that's not going to be good, but I let them go. I let them try. I let them do. And when they fall and they come back like crying or sad or this was not a good choice, so then I'll speak with them and say, what happened? You chose this, so what happened? What do you think now you can do different? If something similar to this happens to you in later on, what can you do? How can you manage this so you won't get hurt again? It's a simple thing. Imagine, and the other day I went with my younger son because he wanted to learn how to rollerblade. And he was being stubborn because he wanted to do it in a different way. And I knew he would fall and scratch his knees. But he wanted to do it. And I said, okay, try it. Of course, he fell. And then he came back and he said, oh, I should have listened to you. Okay, it's okay. So now try the way I told you and see how it goes. So these choices and giving them autonomy, it's two things that I really stand for and I do with both of my children.
That's beautiful, Sandra. Thank you for sharing that. Because we know autonomy is extremely important in terms of helping individuals and especially young adults and young children really live to their full potential. So I know you have what we would consider is a strong parenting style where giving them a lot of choice, a lot of leeway. Is there anything like starting today, especially for your child who's 12? So what are you currently doing as a parent to help him develop fully into his own person?
I am, regarding my 12-year-old, he's getting out of it, like me, an introvert. What I do is I give him tools of self-confidence every day. As I did with my students before I was a mom, children need self-confidence tools to help them believe in themselves. They have all their friends around there in their growing journey, and they always see friends with better abilities than them. And children always look to the ones that do something better than them, and they always put themselves down. What I'm doing to my son specifically is, and always coming from a position of love. What I do with my son is every time I speak with him, I come from a position of love. And then I address him in his confidence and in the things that I know he can have success, if I say. My son, for instance, he's really brilliant in math. So if I want to call something to attention that I know that he has to get better on, before I'll try to work with him around something of math or rational thought that I know he just strives. And after this, I go to an exercise of something that I know he needs to improve. And that's how I do. I empower him with something that he really likes and he achieves something. He knows he can do it. And then I go to another task that I know he has challenges to overcome. That's how I do.
Thank you, Sandra, for sharing that. And you may know the work of the two psychologists, Desi and Ryan. Their work as psychologists, the self-determination theory, a couple of the points that you mentioned, they specifically talked about, because they said as humans, we thrive the three basic needs. And you talked about two of them already, autonomy. So that whole idea of wanting to have control over the course of our lives and having some options and choices. And then you just talked about competence, that whole feeling of needing to feel as if we can be effective and can achieve certain things. And then, of course, relatedness was the other one, talking about the connection. And we know as humans, we all need to feel connected to others. So you're doing a wonderful job as a parent, Sandra.
I really, really hope so, because I want my son to thrive. My stepson is really good. So I think educating him half-half, we did also a very good job. With my son, it's different because it's 100% on me and my husband, his father. And yes, can you repeat the last part of your question, please?
Oh, no, it wasn't a question. It was just a statement giving you credit for being a great mom. Because I said you touched on two of the most important points in terms of what humans need to thrive in life. And you regularly, it looks like you're integrating that into your parenting style, which is wonderful.
I am. I really am. I love to see my son over the years, since he was a baby, his fears and the way he was approaching things and the way he's been flourishing to what he's now a pre-teenager and how now he explores. So I really hope that he continues with that throughout life.
Thank you, Sandra, for sharing that. And we are sending him our well wishes as well. And I'm sure he will turn up to be an upstanding young gentleman, both of your sons. So Sandra, I actually want to continue on our talk about how you have been integrating the tools that you've learned throughout your journey and helping others maximize their lives and their potential. So if we could just start a little bit about your journey, where you started your journey as a therapist. So moving from a physical education teacher and how you became involved in traditional Chinese medicine, as well as then integrating your life coaching with psychology. So if you could just take us through that journey, please.
Yes. So first being a teacher with the physical education, it was a passion that I had. I always had the passion to teach others. Children or younger friends or small children would like to sit around me and listen what I had to say. I like to teach through stories. It's easier and it's captivating. So I like it. I liked sports and I like teaching, and I decided to go for PE teacher. While I was in my practice and being a PE teacher in Portugal, we teach part of our classes outside and part of our classes inside the pavilions. So when I was teaching outside, I was always in a very poor neighborhoods where children had a lot of problems with their families and in life in general. And every time I was teaching my class, my students that were in a different class, when they have problems with the other teachers and they were invited to leave the classroom, they would escape from the place they were supposed to be, and they were coming and they were sitting close to me, waiting for me to have 5 minutes of my class to go and speak with them. So in my years of being a PE teacher, I was what in school they call the psychologist on top, on site. And I wasn't a psychologist. So it was kind of funny without the tools, but the kids were coming and I was able to manage them and send them back to class, calming them down and making them realize they were supposed to do it differently. And with this, it came the need of exploring more the mind, the way we think, and how we can overcome this. So I started to get in my mind that I could do something about it. But at the time, I couldn't, because it was really far from me. But I wanted to study. And a friend of mine heard me and she said, "Oh, it's nothing similar to what you want, but Chinese medicine looks at the mind in a similar way." And I said, "What? Chinese medicine?" "Yeah, because they interconnect everything." And I said, "Oh, that's just needles," in my thought at the time. So I decided to investigate a little bit, and I couldn't do the psychology at the time. So me and some friends, we decided to do the 5 years of a practitioner for traditional Chinese medicine. So I did it. I learned about acupuncture. I learned about traditional medicines from natural medicines. And also I learned about the connection between what we have in our body, the feelings and the pains, with our mental and with the energy that acupuncture and traditional medicine explain. And that made me realize it was very, very important to start thinking and considering mind. And that's when I had my son. And I had some problems after birth because I lost a lot of blood. So I got what it's called kind of postpartum depression. And I didn't want to take pills. So I used traditional Chinese medicine to support my energy and phytotherapy to support and get better. And then I discovered hypnosis to support me on the mental and on the emotion side. And that's when the master in psychology appeared in my life. I decided to study more. And that's how everything of my, all of my degrees came together. They came for a need in my life because I wanted to give more back, just asking me questions that I previously asked to myself. What I didn't realize at the moment was all this knowledge started to even more make me in contact with the person that I didn't know I was. Because when I started to study the mind and the energy, I started to realize and I started to remember who I was when I was a child, having different thoughts and having different images around my head. And I said, "Oh my God, I'm so far away from who I'm supposed to be." So that's why I started to navigate and uncover what I call now, the name I gave it, the essence. So all the tools, all the knowledge, all the path, it's always bringing me back to what I want to know about myself. So everything is interconnected. I hope I made myself clear.
Yes, you did, Sandra. Just a lot of different points there. Thank you for sharing that. Just in terms of you looking inward, looking at what you needed in your life and then being able to fulfill that and then realizing that it can also help other individuals. Because even when I go back to when you talked about being a teacher in physical education and how you were telling the stories, and we know story is one of the most powerful ways of helping individuals connect to themselves and also connect to other people. And we know that it's a great way to have influence and inspire other individuals. And I do want to delve in now to your work, because we just talked a little bit on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, about growth and how that could be the starting of an individual's healing. And we did talk about that connection between mind and the body. And I do want you to talk a little bit more to our listeners who didn't have the opportunity to hear you speak about that. So if you could just talk about that mind-body connection and how that affects our healing.
Okay, mind and body. Many people believe that, or they separate, the body is one thing, the mind is another thing. And if you want to go further, we can speak about it or not. The energy or the soul, the spirituality is another thing, like three different compartments. I don't believe in that. And starting from the body and going only now between the body and the mind, when we have a physical pain in our body and it stays there for a long time, Usually that physical pain is related with an emotional pain or a mental pain. Because, and according with traditional Chinese medicine, they stand out for the traditional Chinese medicine knowledge. It stands out that we should treat the disease before it gets to the body. So we should work with everything in the mental, emotional, energetic body before it goes to the physical. Imagine one person that suffers with anxiety. In the first years of that disorder, and anxiety is something that everyone has, the person just gets a bit irritated and explodes, for instance, for no reason at all. If the person doesn't address that explosion, the anxiety starts to go up, and that person starts to have headaches. After a while, if they don't address headaches, they start to have that feeling that we have before, nausea. Starts to have nausea. The anxiety can take to headaches and nausea, and also to stomach problems, ulcers, or constipation. All of these come into the body. And people just address constipation. People just address a headache or just address nausea. But all of these combine what they have before, it's anxiety. And we are just talking between body and mind. There are much more complicated things that we can see on this connection, but just stay with these two because it's easier to understand the connection between the body and the mind.
Thank you, Sandra. We're going to spend a little more time there. I like what you're saying in terms of when we first notice a pain in our body, it's connected to something else. And I want to actually now delve deep into your book called The Dance of Life, which was just recently released in October of 2021, because you yourself noticed pains before you were actually diagnosed in November 2019 with stage 2 colon cancer. So can you take us back first to what you were feeling and then to that moment when the doctor actually told you you had stage 2 colon cancer, please?
Yes, there with this, I can explain you everything. I can, with what I had, it's kind of, I can summarize everything. And that's why I call my book The Dance of Life, A Woman's Practical System on How to Claim Personal Power. Because I was noticing in me mood swings, high and low mood swings. I was extremely irritated, and then I would just go really low and just don't care about lots of things. I couldn't sleep. I was not a good sleeper, but I was worse. And then I realized I had blood in my stools. What it captured my attention, of course, it was the blood that took me straight to the doctor. But when I stopped to think afterwards, I realized the mood swings, they were not mine. So that wasn't me, the person I knew. So I realized something was there and I should acknowledge. My exams were really fast, considering many other persons with who I spoke that their diagnosis took a long time. Mine was really fast, even though acknowledging the blood. And I kind of felt after the first exam, when the doctor told me that we needed to go for more exams, I knew. I don't know how, but something just popped in my ear internally. And collect your tools, collect everything you learn because you are starting a new journey. And I didn't know, but the feeling was there. I didn't say nothing. I didn't express this to anyone at the time. And we had to go for the big exam. And when the big exam came and the doctor said, "You have cancer," it seemed, I thought I was ready to hear because I knew something was there, but I was hoping that it wasn't, of course. And when he said, it seemed that my life was upside down. It was like taking the rug under my feet and just pulled it away. And I was like trembling and what do I do? Trying to put my both feet on the floor and say, you can do this. But no, I started to, can I do this? What's going to happen after? Am I able to take this? What's going to be? And I realized I was really, really scared of one thing. And it was the fear of dying. That was what came to my mind. And what I had to deal was using everything I knew, everything I learned to overcome this terrible fear of dying. Because everyone associates cancer with death. And it's not true. It's not true at all. Of course, there are some people who die with cancer, but there are much more who don't. But I had to do that internal treatment on myself. I had to acknowledge that I was scared to die. I had to acknowledge that I had cancer and that I didn't want to die yet, despite of all of my beliefs. So I decided I want to live. I want to have a long life. So let's go, lady, and do what you have to do and move on.
Thank you, Sandra, for sharing that journey. I want to go back and ask you just a few questions, because I know in starting your book, The Dance of Life, which I mentioned is extremely well written. I love the structure. I love your musings. I know during the time it might have been challenging to write those all down, considering the pain that you went through. But I remember at some point in your book, you said, this is dated as February 17, 2020. You said, "I am not afraid of death or dying. What I am scared of is not living intensely before I die this time. So let's go back to what you mentioned when you first got that diagnosis and you were saying, I wanted to live. I wasn't ready to die yet. What do you think shifted from that first diagnosis in November of 2019 to when you move now to 2020, where you actually say, I'm not afraid of dying. I'm not afraid of death.
I know you would ask that question. Yes. What shifted was I wasn't in control. You know, sometimes we think we have control on something, but we don't. So I decided to let go. I started my cancer treatment, and I'm a Catholic. I started my cancer treatment 17th of December, so 1 week kind of before Christmas. I realized it wasn't in my hands at that moment. The only thing I could do is it was my part. I could do my treatment for the body and then with my friend, the one that gave me the guidelines to do the book with her, we did in me spiritual treatment also. So I put it in the hands of God, if I may say, independent of every person's beliefs, my life. And I decided to let go. I couldn't have more control anymore because control was making me exhausted. And I couldn't control this. I only could do my part. And my part was living life. So even every day that I was going to treatment, I decided to live that each of the days one by one. Because if I would die, I had to take the most out of life. And I was always imagining myself every day living that day and imagining myself living after cancer. Imagining doing simple things like going to the beach or going to the supermarket or driving my car or taking my son to school or having a good moment with my husband. I was doing it while I was in treatment and I was seeing myself doing it after. And that's why I say that I have to live to the most. At certain point in my connection, in my intuition, I realized I was not going to die this time from this. And that gave me strength. And I stopped being afraid of dying. I think today, now, in the present moment, I can say I'm not afraid of dying because I know in my personal deep belief that life doesn't end when we physically die in this lifetime.
Thank you, Sandra. Thank you for sharing that. I want to touch on a few of your points. So that whole notion of surrendering and letting go of whatever doubts and fears you had, whatever worries, because I know sometimes it's challenging for us as humans to do that. What do you think enabled you to really let go? And as you mentioned, you started focusing on what you can control.
What enabled me to start letting go, it was pain. It was a physical pain. In this specific moment, because I was having radiation in chemotherapy, it was a physical pain that I was feeling with the treatments. And I couldn't do nothing about it. And when we have a physical pain, we have to cry because it hurts. And what happens is when we have a pain, we have to cry the pain. And I think this is a very good thing for everyone to try. when we have a deep pain, and if we cry the pain, realize how you feel after you cry the pain, because we get light inside. And this was one connection I did. I realized when I had a very deep physical pain from radiation and from chemo, and that would come to my emotions, I just had the need to cry. And when we cry, we are not in control, because we are in a place of, we are weak. We are just crying. But crying just releases everything out. And every time I was crying, I was just delivering to the universe, if I may say, I was just releasing my pain to the universe. And that made me feel more empowered. I realized that every time I was crying, I was feeling better after. And I had so many pains to cry, because I was feeling the pain from the treatment, and it was crying, emotional heaviness. I had to let it out. And I decided to let it out. I decided not to have it inside. And that's what happened to me.
Thank you, Sandra. You remind me of something that Gabby Bernstein, who's an American author and motivational speaker, and she recently, I haven't read her book, but she recently wrote a book, The Universe Has Your Back. And she says, when you think you've surrendered, surrender more. And it just reminded me of what you were just saying about really letting go emotionally. And so it seems as if at some point you were at peace with yourself. So thank you for sharing that, Sandra. I really appreciate that. Okay, Sandra, we're going to delve deep into your book before we part. So first, Sandra, before we actually delve into the dance of life, can you just share with individuals where they can find you on social media platforms? So we could put that in the show notes, please.
Yes, in social media. First, you can find me in my website. It has my name, www.sandramartin.com. That's, and there is all my personal contacts to get in touch with me. And my second one, it's on Instagram. You can find me on sandra.c.i.martinho. And all of these contacts are in the end of my book also. These are the two big ones where it's easier to find.
Thank you, Sandra. And of course, you could just Google her as well, because her book is available just about anywhere you can buy your books. So I know I purchased it from Amazon, but I would like to purchase another copy from you personally, Sandra, when I see you in person, because then I know the profits are going directly to you. So we'll put all your contact details in the show notes. And before we delve deep into your book, I want to start with this quote, because as you were talking, how you've been able to reframe so much that's happened to you in your life, it just reminded me of a quote by Viktor Frankl. And for those of our listeners who don't know who he is a neurologist and psychiatrist who chronicled basically his experiences as a prisoner of war in World War II and the concentration camps. His seminal work, I would say it is one of his seminal works, Man's Search for Meaning, which was published in 1945. And one of my favorite quotes that I reference all the time is from him. He goes, "Everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way." I want to ask you, what is your understanding of this quote, and how do you think this relates to your journey?
Yeah, it relates to me because I think it's related with a word that I like to use, that it's our innate power. Power is our own ability of doing something. And that's this personal ability, it's something that cannot be withdrawn from us. So they can take everything from us, but they cannot take our power, our most basic ability of standing out in this world. So that's where I stand on this. We all have to have that in ourselves.
Agreed. Definitely. So I want to start with some of the concepts that are explored in your book. And I know one of the main concepts is that whole idea of essence. So I want you to just take a few minutes, explain what your understanding of essence is and how it related to your journey. We're just going to take maybe a couple of the concepts.
Yes, essence is my guiding star. Every time I speak about the essence, my eyes just start to glow. If you would see me now, probably you would just understand how I feel about it. Finding our essence, it's the core of everything. I think it's the core of our purpose here in life. All of us. Everyone says, I have this purpose. I want to help that person. I want to do this. I want to do that. I believe our purpose, it's to find ourselves. It's to be ourselves no matter what. And that can change over life. I can relate with myself when I was 15. I thought I was being me every time, even though I was an introvert and I wouldn't be able to speak. But with my understanding of a 15-year-old mind, I thought I was me, even though I challenged myself and I learned. And throughout life, I was just unpeeled, you know, unpeeling the onion and trying to get to the root. So for me, the essence is, it's just who we are in the core. And sometimes we don't know who we are. We realize that when we please others. We realize that when we want to control. And the essence, it's so deep. It's so beautiful. It's so shiny. It's like an internal flame, like an internal sparkle that we have. For me, I see it, I feel it close to my heart. Some of us, we let this sparkle, we turn it down, and we can't. We just can't. We need to give it fire. Essence is who we are. We are all different, but we have to acknowledge that. Essence is our energy. It's our power force. It's our body, our mind, our soul, our emotions, all of them combined. We should cherish our essence. When we like to do something, we should do to grow our essence. When we have a pain and we are not being kind with us because we persist on following something that is painful and not something that gives us peace, these decisions can take us far away from our essence or close to our essence. If I have a job, for instance, because in this life we have to have a job, and every day I go to my job and I feel miserable, I'll feel crappy, and I still go, this is taking me very, very far away from my essence because I go there from a position of pain and I don't deal with that pain. I should go in a position of love and try to manage the pain. But driving people to the essence, that's what I did to myself. It's the most beautiful thing. I don't know if people already felt their essence. Once I created a small guided meditation to read or to teach my clients and my patients so they could feel their essence. They get connected with them at least once. It's the most beautiful thing when we feel our essence, when we feel the love that we have in us. Essence is just beautiful.
Thank you, Sandra. I love how you also describe it in the book as the flame that keeps us alive and gives us hope. So thank you for sharing that. Let's share a couple more concepts. I'll let you choose, Sandra. Which one would you like to talk about next?
I particularly like one that is connection. And in my book, I say connection is fundamental, but totally optional. we have within us all the strengths and knowledge that we need to grow and evolve. Why did I choose connection? Because we must be connected with us. In the beginning, I realized I wasn't connected between my emotions and my thoughts. So I had to build on that connection. And that made me, when I speak, I would be emotionally balanced to speak things from my heart and not only from my mind. So I had to put the wire between my mind and my heart connected. They were not connected. They were cut. So I had to establish that connection. Of course, this is a personal choice that I decided to do. That's why I say it's not compulsory. It's optional. And then we go beyond, because I really believe we are a spiritual being having a human experience. So the connection is just there because I'm a spiritual being. So we are connected. In our guts, we are connected. And connection can be just one simple thing as when I get to know one person, sometimes we have that feeling, whoa, I didn't like that person. We should acknowledge that feeling. Or it could happen exactly the opposite. I don't know why, but I really love that person. This is how connection works. Is our energetic body giving us the information to trust or not to trust, to like or not to like. That's why I chose this one, especially connection, because this is what gives us the undercover information to our physical being of what is good or positive for us from what is not good or negative for us in our life.
Thank you, Sandra. Yes, and it just references what you mentioned in that chapter about we all have the strength and knowledge we need to evolve and grow. So connection is extremely important. And if we could take one more core concept from your book, we don't want to give everything away because we want everyone to purchase The Dance of Life.
Okay, I go for one that I also like, and it's challenging. It comes from the psychology, one part, and the other part comes a bit from the more esoteric or spiritual area. It's ego versus higher self. And why do I like this one? Because I believe in our life, we go from the ego to the higher self. This, in my opinion, of course, it should be our path. What is ego? Ego, it's a reflection of the material and the known thoughts and actions. It's what we know. It's where our comfort zone is. It's like a personal belief. Like, I really believe that men are all the same, for instance. I'm speaking from the ego, from what I've learned, from my culture, from my education, etc., etc. The higher self, it's exactly the opposite. It's located not in the physical world. It's located somewhere up there. And in the higher self, it's where we have our essence, in a matter of speak. Because it's our higher self. It's the most evolved of me, if I may say, that I can ever be. And my higher self doesn't have any judgment, just has acceptance. So I should move from the concept of all men are the same, for men are different from each other. Some of them believe in ABC. And some of them believe in CDE. And I should shift my mind of my preconceived behaviors and ways of thinking to be more acceptant and more positive when I have a belief that I don't know if it's totally real. And then I will move from my ego to a more wide and uplifted consideration about something that I have. And it makes me go closer to my higher self, closer to be more in gratitude, to be more, to have more respect, to have more acceptance, And that makes me go to this higher self.
Thank you for sharing that, Sandra. I know that letting go of ego could be challenging for someone. Is there any steps that you'd recommend our listeners can take in terms of helping them along that pathway of really letting go of ego so they could move towards really truly knowing themselves and, as you mentioned, attaining that higher self?
Yes. I think we touched this point lightly before, but for me, letting go of the ego, we need to assume that we don't control anything. So moving from a position of let go, not control, it's one first step to let go of the ego. Because when the ego is our comfort zone, and we want to be in our comfort zone, so we control. We control everything and everyone around us, metaphorically speaking, of course. When we start letting go of the control, the ego starts to get uncomfortable and he starts to manifest. And then you want to control again. Nope. So moving forward from the ego first is letting go of the control. What happens is when we engage in this one of letting go of the control, what comes is the fear of lack of control. So we have to acknowledge the fear by itself. Someone that is always in control, they don't consider abandoning the control because they don't want to face the fear. But this is interconnected. And what happens is when we let go the control, we acknowledge the fear that comes from it, we start to move forward to the what I call the acceptance. So what happens, these three steps, it's letting go the control, accepting the fear that comes with it, so we can move to the real acceptance and move forward in life. There are exercises that can be done, but it's a process that everyone could engage in their life. When they feel they have to control something, try to let go and see what happens.
Thank you, Sandra. I know it's something I have to work on as well. And you mentioned this quite a few times in your book, just really believing deeply for me that everything is going to be okay. So letting go of control, letting go of those things that I cannot control. Thank you. And Sandra, I am going to ask you to read just a portion of your book, because like I mentioned, the language was so powerful. But before I do that, and before we conclude tonight's session, so Sandra, I actually want to just go to your title of the book. And you know, I believe in the power of language, and you've the dance of life. Why that title?
Because I love to dance. Because life is nothing without dancing for me, of course. And I really believe that the way we dance, the dance of our life, it can carry us or smoothly through life or through the rocks and the mountains. When we dance, we feel light. When we move our body, we feel light. The invitation I do in the book of the dance of life, it's how we dance to find ourselves. And this is something I'm sharing now with you, and I think I have already shared. When I'm in a bad mood in the morning, for instance, and I need to shift my mood, I do it through dance, with music, of course. I'll just choose a music that allows me to express through dance what I have to release so my mood gets better. And my dream was to be a ballerina. So it's a metaphor, the dance of life.
Thank you for sharing that. And we know that's so powerful, being able to reframe something and shifting your mindset by, and I know you're specifically doing it through movement. It definitely would give you a slightly different perspective on the day. And before we end, I want to ask you just a couple more things. So first, as you are aware, this podcast is about empowering and inspiring young girls and women. So what is the impact you wish to have on young girls and women across the globe and in the UAE?
When others see a lady doing something, imagine girls. Girls, some of them are born and raised at home and they stay at home all their life. And they saw their mothers and their grandmothers doing the same. They were raised and their life was inside their house. They never lived from there. They stayed there. I came from a very small town, the very closed mindset. And I came out of that reality. I changed. I became a better human being. So what I would like is when someone looks at me and see what I conquered, it's not how famous we can turn. It's not how much money we can have. We can have all of that, but what type of human being I became? Am I a loving person? Do I have enough peace when I go at night to my bed and I put my head on my pillow? Do I have peace? Do these girls can grow up being themselves in a peaceful way? Because with the societal stigma of ladies need to be at home and not be able to live and conquer themselves and be themselves, can they do that from a loving and peaceful situation, being accepted by their family and being out there exploring themselves? I could do that. I could heal myself. I could do my path. I've grown a lot since where I was when I was a child to where I am today. And if someone looks at me and asks, this is what I would say. This is what my legacy that I would leave is. Just someone looks at me and see that I'm a loving, happy, trustworthy person. That would be the legacy I want to leave.
That's such a wonderful legacy, Sandra. Thank you for sharing that. And it reminded me, I was just listening to a podcast, Impact Theory, the other day, and some of the questions Tom Bilyeu, who's the host of Impact Theory, says he always asks himself, like, have I been loving? Have I been kind? Have I been caring? Have I been honest? And he goes pretty much through his core values. But when you were talking about what type of human being you want to be, it just reminded me of that. And his focus, obviously, on character, as well as your focus on character, as opposed to what you're doing. So, Sandra, I want to ask you one last question. What is your win? What is now important to you? So you've gone through this healing journey. A lot of us have learned so many gems from you. What's important to you now as a mother, author, wife, and all the many hats that you wear in life?
What's important for me at this moment in life is being truthful to myself, not doing things because others expect me to do. What's important to me at this moment is say yes when I want to say yes and say no when I want to say no. And this is really, I really stand out here. I couldn't say no. And today I'm proud to say that I can say no when something that is asked, it's not profitable for me as a human being. And this is one of the biggest learnings I had, when I had to learn to be me and stand out from me and see that my internal power is when I can say no to something that it's not good for the human being I believe I am.
Thank you, Sandra. You reminded me of what an individual I've heard say, that think about when you are saying yes, what are you saying no to? And I know I personally have to learn to say no more often, because sometimes I do feel overwhelmed. And I don't know if it's expectation, as you mentioned. Previously, you would have said yes because of expectations. For me, I just sometimes think I'm superwoman and think I can handle everything. And then I realize I should have said no from the beginning. So thank you for giving us the extra impetus to say no more often.
Yeah, so true.
One last question. Is there any question that I didn't ask that you would like to answer, or a question that you would like to answer more often in some of your past conversations with individuals and some of your past interviews? So any question that you would like to delve into?
Yes, I have one. And the question is, I don't know if it's a standard question or... but it's the question I have. What is the most valuable thing in the world for me?
Okay, so I'm going to ask that. So Sandra, what is the most valuable thing in the world for you?
The most important thing is my life. We should treasure our life. That's the most important thing for me. I think everyone should ask this question. Because if we don't have life, we cannot do anything here. Everyone should ask this question to themselves. We put ourselves in the end of the train, in the last chair in the end of the train, but we shouldn't. We should be in the first chair. We should be driving the train, because we will take the train. We will take our life. We are the only ones who can take our life forward. That's why we are the most valuable thing in the world.
Very important reminder. We are definitely the masters of our life. Thank you for that reminder, Sandra. So Sandra, I really want to say thank you. First, thank you for your patience, because I know we were a little delayed today doing the taping. So thank you for your patience. Thank you for sharing your journey. Thank you for your courage, your bravery, your vulnerability. Thank you for encouraging us to practice the art of surrendering and letting go. Thank you for encouraging us also to tap into our innate power, to really start that journey of finding our true selves and true inner peace. So thank you, Sandra. It was so wonderful chatting with you today. I'm confident that our listeners gained many gems from our conversation that can help them start on their own journey of healing.
Thank you, Gina, for the opportunity. It was really good to talk with you. I really, really love. And we learn from everything. These bits and pieces that we've been connecting with each other, they were really good. You are an awesome lady starting an awesome job. And for that, I wish you all the best. All the best, Gina. You rock, lady. You just rock.
Thank you, Sandra, for the compliments. And it's been so wonderful getting to know you. Thank you again to our mutual friend, Beatrix, for introducing us. I'm looking forward to continued collaboration with you. So thank you and have a wonderful evening.
You too, Gina. Kisses, kisses, and a hug. And bye-bye and see you next time. You and everyone who's listening, I wish you all the best. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a good evening. You're like a swing of wings to fly. Like a swing of wings. You're like a swing of wings to fly. You're like a swing of wings. Music on this podcast is provided by Alexandra Kirschdisch. The composition is titled Beautiful Spheres, which was released on April 3rd, 2019. Alexandra Kirschdisch can be found on Facebook at Alexandra Kirschdisch and on Instagram at Alexandra Kirschdisch _official.